All right, we're beginning here with the Mishnah on the top of Ayin Aleph and Amud Aleph. The Mishnah says, "Umanim shel Yisrael shalach lehem ube kochavim kavit shel yayin nesech v'skaran mutar lomar ten lenu et dameha mishenichnas al rishutan asur." So we have Jewish craftsmen who need to get paid. The ube kochavim is going to pay them, hands them a kavit shel yayin nesech. And that would be problematic because then they'd have to monetize that chavit shel yayin nesech and then get benefit from the yayin nesech. So before it reaches their possession, they can say to him, please pay us the money that you owe us and don't give us the yayin nesech. They have a right to do that because there's no obligation to give yayin nesech in this case. The obligation is actually a monetary obligation. He owes them money. He's giving them in-kind payment through the yayin nesech, but that's his choice. That's not their choice. So that's not their desire at all. So if they say to him, please don't give us yayin nesech, give us money, that's not causing the exchange of yayin nesech for money. That's just saying, pay us the way that we're supposed to get paid. As we saw earlier in the Masechta, that if the goy liquidates his avodah zarah or yayin nesech, and then takes that money to repay you or to pay your salary, there's no iser in you taking that money. And the Ritva here actually specifies that when they return it to him, they have to say to him, we don't want yayin nesech. They can't say to him, go and liquidate the yayin nesech, because then it really, in a sense, he becomes their shaliach. Or they might even have a vested interest in the sustaining of the yayin nesech until he liquidates it. So they have to reject it as payment. They can't direct him to then liquidate it and bring the money instead. They just say, we want money, take this back. And then once it reaches their possession, then you have a problem because then it's theirs. And then they are exchanging it for money. And that means that they're monetizing Yisurei Hana'ah, or the yayin nesech, which is not permitted. And obviously, this has to be a case where they either somehow agreed to take the yayin nesech, or they accepted the yayin nesech, because otherwise he can't force them to take the yayin nesech and then make it problematic for them. Amar Rav Yehuda Marav, mutar le'adam lomar lovei kochavim, tzev apes alai minat ha-melech. A Jew is allowed to say to a non-Jew, go and appease the king, really means satisfy my obligation towards the king. And Rashi over here explains that the manat ha-melech is arnona, their payment of the taxes. The way Rashi describes it over here is that it's a quasi-income tax. He says that they used to give from their produce, from their animals. Rashi claims an isur, which is interesting because I don't know if we ever find a definition of the percentage of taxes that they were paying. But here he says that they gave them a tenth. And the Jew here has an obligation to pay him the wine, or the monies, or whatever it is that he has to give to the king. The Rashi explains over here that the reason he's allowed to do this is, even though this non-Jew steps in and gives the yayin nesech on behalf of this Jew, and then the Jew repays him with money, which means that he's basically purchasing the yayin nesech effectively, because the goy gave the yayin nesech on his behalf, and now he's paying the goy for that. Since he could have paid off the king with money, then when the Ovi Kuchami makes a choice to pay in that way, then it's really his choice. And since he's making the choice, it's not as if he's acting as a proxy for the Jew. The Jew simply says to him, can you satisfy my obligation with the taxes and I'll pay you back? Now he could have satisfied that with money, with anything else or anything in kind. He chose to give wine, but that again is the goy's choice. It has nothing to do with the Jew. The Jew would have been just as happy if he paid him cash, or he could have paid him cash. And therefore, when the Jew goes to repay him, there's no issue involved with him paying, even though yayin nesech was given on his behalf. So meitave, is that really true? Ayumar adam lobe kochavim, o tachti lo utzar, go and place me in my stead to the utzar. Amar le rav, o tachti lo utzar kamart. That's what you're describing? Halodami alaha. It's not equivalent to that case, but rather to this case, the seifa there. Valomerlo malteni min haotzar. You can't say to him, help me to escape from the otzar. So here, Rashi again explains that if you use the terminology of ultachti, then it stand in my place. Lapisat the shoter means to appease the shoter or the tax collector that's coming around. In that way, you're really asking him to be your shaliach, or be your proxy. So if he's acting on your behalf, then that's problematic. Because once he's acted and given yayin nesech, that means that on your behalf he's given yayin nesech. And if you're to repay him, or you're to assume that that was done on your behalf, you're now getting benefit from Yayin Nesach. And that would be the problem. Rashi does bring a second interpretation that Lashon Yatzor is not from the word Atzor, Shoter, but rather Lashon Utsar with an Aleph. So wrote Yayin Veshem and Shomelech Legabot Vela Utsar. So the Utsar here would be someone who was in charge of the king's storage or the king's warehouses. On the other hand, if he says to him, Malteini Mina Utsar, save me from this tax collector, this person that's coming, then he's leaving there's an open checkbook which says that you can pay him any way you want, you can satisfy him any way you want, and therefore he's not acting as a proxy anymore. Plus, he's not paying with the Yayin Nesach because he has to pay the Yayin, but rather because he has an obligation and the Goy chooses to do that because that's the best way he wants to do it, but it has nothing to do with the Jew's choice. Therefore he says that the case of Rav Yehuda Marav is more similar to that case, and then there's no question over here. The Baal Yad Tosafot bring Rashi's interpretation. They say, Perish Rashi Mishum Benu Yechiel, Tichiyam Aleyochi Mutar Mishum Damatze Sluke Bezuzei Min Otsar. Because he can pay him off with cash and get out of the problem. And then the Baal Yad Tosafot would say, Velo Nira, Tim Kim Pshita Damalteini Min Otsar Shari. It seems so simple then, that if he tells him, you know, get me out of the problem, that of course he shouldn't be having an obligation, and that's so simple. The case where the Jew has an obligation in particular to give wine. It would be more equivalent to the strategic reserves of the king, which is there the king in particular wants the wine and the shemen because he's storing them. Not because he wants to collect the taxes, but more along the lines that he wants to create a backup, a reserve. And then in that case, when you specifically ask, O Tachti, you should replace me, replacing me over there is where there is a demand for a particular item that you give Yayin or Shemen, and then he's acting as your proxy because of that obligation. Nevertheless, if you just say to him, get me out of this obligation, it's okay for the Jew to do this. Mishum d'hachi kamar le, salek oto b'mashe tuchal. Get me out of this problem any way you can. So even though, again, this is like the strategic reserve of the king, and you have to pay wine, and you've got to give wine into here, nevertheless, the language you use will make a difference. That if you say, do it in my stead, then you will have a problem, because the obligation is wine, and you're asking him to stand in his shoes to pay the wine. On the other hand, if he says, malteini na means just say, get me out of this problem. Now, it happens to be that most likely you're going to have to pay wine for it, but there are other options sometimes to pay cash, or who says you have to use Yayin Nesach? Either of those then make it mutar for the Yisrael because he's not directing him to give Yayin Nesach. And if that's the case, then when the Jew uses the Lashon HaMalteini Na, that's a big chiddush, that even though he's really obligated to pay wine, he still will not be penalized if the Goy gives him Yayin Nesach on his behalf. But if he says, O Tachti, I'm Chayav Yayin, and you do it on my behalf, you're in essence creating a proxy to do what you were obligated to do, and that was to pay wine. In that case, you can't escape from the fact that you're basically asking him to pay wine, and that Yayin Nesach will cause a problem for you. So Rashi says the key difference here in the Lashon of Rav, in the principle of Rav, is whether you have the capacity to pay in cash, or you have to pay in Yayin. If you have the capacity to pay in cash, then the individual is not considered to be your Shaliach. Whereas if you only have the ability to pay in wine, then in essence he becomes your shaliach. Whereas for the Baal Yad Tosafot, the key difference here is the language. If you use the language of shlichut, which says that you're really appointing him as your proxy, then it's problematic. On the other hand, if you use a lashon that says, get this guy off my back, and don't indicate that you're really making him into a proxy, then it's not considered to be shlichut and be mutar. And that's irrespective of whether you can pay in cash or you can pay in yayin. Now, mocher yino le'oved kochavim. An individual sells his wine to a non-Jew. Pasak ad shelo madad. If they come to an agreement on price before they start to measure it out, damav mutarim. The money you collect for that sale is mutar. Madad ad shelo pasak. In other words, if it was the other way around where you measured out the amount of wine, and then only afterwards came to a conclusion on price, damav asurim. Then the monies you garner from that are considered to be a swap with the Yayin Nesach, and that would be a problem, isurei hana'a, because you're getting benefit from the sale of Yayin Nesach, which turned into Yayin Nesach, when the individual came into contact with them, when the goy touched them, before the sale was complete. So Amar Meimar, Mishicha Ovid Kuchavim Koneh. That when it comes to Ovid Kuchavim, the mechanism or the way that you can create a transaction with a goy is to use a kinyan mishicha. Teda, I can prove that to you. Dani Parsai, Mishadre Pardashne Lahadodi, because these Persians send, we'll use the first interpretation of Rashi, the Baal Tosfot seems to favor this, gifts to each other, below Hadribu, and they don't back out of it. So even though they've given a gift, they still follow through on the gift. There's no money here, and yet they still uphold their commitment to give the gift, because there was a Kinyan Mishicha. So you see that the Kinyan Mishicha is the mechanism for Kinyan, for the goy. Rashi does bring a second interpretation as to what this pardashne are, not a gift. And again, the Baal Tosfot favor that explanation as well. It seems like Rashi favored that explanation. But he brings from the Tshuvat HaGaonim that this pardashne was that an individual who was selling items, produce to his friend, would send over a sample to him. And then the individual received the sample. If he wanted the transaction to go through, he'd keep the sample and have the Kinyan Mishicha on it, and that would make the transaction, quote-unquote, binding. If he sent it back, it meant that he wasn't happy with the quality, and therefore the transaction wouldn't go through. And so what they're saying is, how come they follow through and sell everything they said they're going to sell when they send the sample over? Where was the Kinyan? So the answer is there was a Kinyan Mishicha. Now, the truth is that this Kinyan Mishicha is really dependent on whether he really wants the item or doesn't want the item. And so, the Kinyan Mishicha is just the sidebar to his willingness to go through or not go through with the transaction. But that, Rashi brings us another possibility as to the Persian practice that after they sent over the sample and the person kept the sample, that that's quote-unquote a Kinyan Mishicha, that they would be bound to fill out the rest of the order based on the agreement that they came to before. Ravashi Amar, and in all likelihood, you can see this in the Girsa and the Rashi, the Baal Tosfot second this, it's not lo olam emei melecha, you should take out that from the Girsa, but rather, Ravashi Amar, Mishicha, Bovi Kochamim, Enu Koneh. This isn't Ravashi speculating, this is Ravashi giving his opinion. His opinion is that Mishicha does not work with an Ovei Kochavim, but rather, money is the mechanism for Kinyan for a non-Jew. So then why don't the Persians back out of transactions or gifts when they give? There's only a Kinyan Mishicha, there's no Kinyan Ma'ot, there's no Kinyan there. The Ramot Ruchahu, the Nikitalu, they are haughty, but haughty in a way that they want to save face. It would be something that would make them look bad if they backed out of the gift. They're not obligated legally to give it, but they want to save face and not allow themselves to be embarrassed by not giving the gift, and therefore they give the gift. It's more an issue of honor than it is of legalities, and that's why they do it, and it has nothing to do with Mishicha. The Baal Tosfot point out that even over here we're talking about a Matana, and Ravashi and Meimar are arguing about Mekach Umemkar. Ravashi's dissent here to say the Mishicha doesn't work is only in cases where there is a monetary aspect of the transaction, meaning that there's a mekach u'memkar. But in cases of matana mitziah, where there is no monetary exchange, it's really a unilateral transaction, in those cases the Baal Tosfot would say that even Ravashi will agree that Kinyan Mishicha works, since there is no money to make it into a Kinyan Ma'ot. Although the Ritva over here disagrees and says that even in cases of Matana and Mitziah, Kinyan Mishicha will not work according to Rav Ashi, and it won't become his until it literally comes into his possession. He can't use any type of proxy Kinyanim, which make it as if it came into his possession. It actually physically will have to come into his possession in order for the transaction to be complete, the Matana or the Mitziah to be binding. Now, here you have a Machloket, and it's important to understand the Machloket here, as to which way, or what is the mechanism for a goy to create kinyanim, that's between two different goyim, or well as a Jew interacting with a goy, what is the mechanism for kinyan? This goes to a machloket Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, which appears in the Gemara in Bava Metzia, as well as in the Gemara in Bichol Roth, where Rabbi Yochanan says that min haTorah, for a Jew, ma'ot konot. Money is the main force of kinyan for a Jew. The reason the Chachamim required Mishicha was because of a problem that we don't want the seller saying, Nisrafu chiteich baliyah, that your stuff got burnt in the aliyah, I don't care about it. Because if the buyer gives him cash and has yet to take possession of the item, there's a possibility that the item can get destroyed, get ruined, and the seller will have no vested interest in taking care of it. So how do we stop that problem? We insist that there's a kinyan mishika. Once they establish a kinyan mishika, and then you can ask the question is, do the ma'ot have any impact at all? That we saw back on the Balei Tosafot on Samech Gimel Amud Aleph, that the Balei Tosafot by Etnan said that even according to the one who says that min haTorah ma'ot konot, once the Chachamim insisted that they do it through a kinyan mishika, they eliminated kinyan ma'ot totally. And therefore, mi d'oraita Etnan, for it mi d'oraita ma'ot konot, aren't going to matter because the Chachamim suspended your ability to do it. But that's the view of Rabbi Yochanan. Rish Lakish's view is that the main kinyan that a Jew uses is a kinyan mishika. That's the main way that Jews interact, and that is because the terminology that is used there in the Parshiyah, the end of Vayikra, Okano miyad amitecha, kinyan sheole miyad yad, is a kinyan that goes from hand to hand, which is kinyan mishika. And over there it says amitecha. That is your friend or your fellow Jew, that's the mechanism for the kinyan. Obviously, Rabbi Yochanan believes that amitecha is going on chetim kru memkar lamitecha, ma'ot konot, and not on the mishika. That machloket, according to the Gemara in Brachot, has implications on the other side of that, which is, if you believe that ma'ot konot for Jews, that means for Jews only are ma'ot konot, that means for non-Jews, you believe mishika is konet. And vice versa, for Rish Lakish, who believes that mishika midoraita works for Jews, that means that he believes ma'ot konot, that money is the main mechanism of kinyan for non-Jews. If you do that, then the opinions of Amemar and Rav Ashi here will align with the opinions of Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, which is, the Meimar who says that Mishika is Koneh holds like Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says Ma'ot Konot Bina Torah for Jews, then for non-Jews, Mishika is the main way, and a Meimar is holding like Rabbi Yochanan. Rav Ashi, who says Mishika does not work, but rather Ma'ot Konot, is holding like Rish Lakish. Rish Lakish, who says that Mishika is the main vehicle for Kinyan for a Jew, then for a non-Jew, the main vehicle is going to be Ma'ot Konot. And that, the machloket here then aligns with that machloket of Rabbi Yochanan Rish Lakish. That does have major implications. Rashi says that we paskin like Rish Lakish with regards to this, and that the halacha is that ma'ot konot for a goy and not mishika. Now, even though when it comes to machloket, Rabbi Yochanan Rish Lakish, we paskin like Rabbi Yochanan. Over here, first of all, you have Rav Ashi aligning with Rish Lakish. Rav Ashi is a batra. The journey of the halacha is like a batra. So, Rav Ashi's support of Rish Lakish is significant. In addition, we have statements by Rava that say Rish Lakish's opinion is supported both by a Kra and a Mishnah, by a Pasuk and a Mishnah. Seemingly then that Rava also paskins like Rish Lakish, but he's bringing support to Rish Lakish's opinion. And that means you have another main Batra like Rava who's paskining like Rish Lakish. And so, if you combine those things together, you get the fact that the halacha is like Rish Lakish. The only mitigating factor there would be the fact that the Gemara and Rava himself says that I always passen like Rabbi Yochanan. With the exception of these three instances, I passen like Rabbi Yochanan. And in these three cases, I passen like Rish Lakish. Yet, we don't find this case as one of those issues where he passens like Rish Lakish. Nevertheless, Rashi says that's because over there, Rish Lakish says his opinion in the name of Rav Hoshaya. When do we say that Rabbi Yochanan Rish Lakish alafake Rabbi Yochanan? That's when it's Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish arguing in their own position. But here, Rish Lakish is bringing someone else's opinion in the name of Rav Hoshaya. And we find other instances of that where Rish Lakish brings the opinion in the name of someone else. We paskin that way, but it's not mentioned in the exceptions to the rule because of the fact that it's brought in someone else's name. For that reason, Rashi paskins, like Rish Lakish, that for a goy, the only mechanism for kinyan is ma'ot konot. Then, Balei Tosafot come along and say, we disagree. Rabbeinu Tam says, halacha here is like a Meimar and like Rabbi Yochanan. Says, apagab the Ravashi batra havo, even though Ravashi is a batra, late hilchato kavate, behai, the halacha is not like him, ela kaimalon ka Meimar. We pass like a Meimar, the Meshicha bovi kufim kone, the sphere like Rabbi Yochanan, because he holds like Rabbi Yochanan, the halacha ki Rabbi Yochanan, the Gabi Rish Lakish. We're going to paskin like Rabbi Yochanan, keneged Rish Lakish. What about the fact that Rava brought proofs to Rish Lakish? He was bringing proofs to Rish Lakish, but that doesn't mean that he holds like him. It just means that he's showing that there are pieces of evidence that support Rish Lakish, but he doesn't hold like him. And I can prove that to you because of the fact that when there's the machlok of Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, Rava says, Allah is like Rabbi Yochanan with the exception of these three cases. Those three cases don't include this case. And for that reason, the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan and a meimor over here, that is Meshicha Koneh. That makes a big nafkamina because of the problems that they were facing in their day that they wanted to solve. They had animals that were born into their flocks that were Bechorot. Bechor is Kadosh min harechem. And you have to deal with the Bechor. It's a significant issue to deal with it. Takala. All sorts of problems that can arise. How do I get rid of that problem is by making a goy my partner. If a goy is a partner in the animal, then it's no longer chayav in Bechor. What they used to do was be makne or sell a portion of the animal to the goy so that there wouldn't be a problem of kedushat Bechor when the firstborn was born or when it was peter rechem. How do you create that kinyan with the goy? Well, now you have a problem. According to Rashi, you do it through ma'ot konot. On the other hand, according to Minutam, you have to do it through a kinyan mishicha. So now you have a serious machloket about how to solve this problem. And here the Balei Tosfot say, Barotz l'chush, the Divrei Rashi Rabbeinu Tam. Therefore, if someone wants to worry about both of them, makne be'imad ovei kuchavim, the putra min ha'bechora, tzarek sh'iten ovei kuchavim kesef, the non-Jew needs to pay money, v'gam mishichat ovei kuchavim, simtal r'shuto shel ovei kuchavim. And he's also got to do a kinyan mishicha, either in the side of the Rishut Rabim, or an area where we allow for kinyanim to take place, or into the possession of the Oved Kochavim. In that way, you accomplish both of them. You have a kinyan kesef and a kinyan mishicha. Then the Balei Tosfot discuss, if the goy doesn't have any land, how do you deal with that? And then, in the end, he says, what do you have to give him? You have to sell him a portion of the animal. He says there is a machloket, whether you can just sell him any part of the animal, or do you have to sell him a part of the animal that would make it into a treifa, that he has to have significant enough ownership in the animal, that which you sell him would be significant enough that the animal would die without that part. The Balei Tosfot would say we favor that view, and therefore you have to sell him something that's of significance, an organ of significance, like the lungs, the heart, something that would render the animal a treifa if he was to take that portion. He says, even though the goy only pays a pruta over here, he doesn't pay the full amount of money, nevertheless the transaction goes through, because we know that the Jew wants this to happen. He has gemira dat to sell it to him, even though he's only gotten a small portion of the real value of the item, because that's going to save him from the issue of bechor, and therefore he has intent to go through with the transaction. All this is interesting only because we're about to do this with mechirat chametz. When you have Mechirat Chametz, it faces the same obstacles that you're speaking about here with regards to the Bechor, which is that you're selling to a goy. How does the goy make a kinyan over here? Does the goy have to make a kinyan Meshicha? Does he do a kinyan Ma'ot? How do you get that to the goy? The way that they do it is to make sure that we do multiple kinyanim to overcome that problem, to ensure that the goy does it in a way that is binding and that he actually buys the Chametz. So in that way, you'd have to do a kinyan Meshicha, Kinyan Ma'ot, and they also do possibly a contractual obligation, Dina de Malchuta Dina. They try many different mechanisms for Kinyan. But part of that relates to what we're speaking about here is, how does a goy make a Kinyan, which is important with Mechirat Chametz, because you need him to actually buy the Chametz. The fact that he only gives a small portion of the money can either mean that he pays a small portion now with the obligation in the future to pay back, that's usually the way it's done, so that he doesn't walk off with all of this for no money, so it's a deposit, with the rest being a loan or an extended credit to him. Or you could argue like the Balei Tosfot, it wasn't of significant value, that the Jew has gemir tatat to sell the chametz because he wants the chametz out of his possession, and therefore even without the full payment, the Jew gives over the chametz. Again, that only works if they're not significant in value. Once you reach items that are of significant value, then nobody's going to have gemir tatat, then you actually might run into the other problem, which is the Jew doesn't really sell it, because he doesn't want the goy coming in for a pruta and taking all of his stuff. And that's why you would create the transaction as being a purchase with a small amount of money and extended credit where he has terms that he has to pay the credit if he wants to take possession of the items. Anyway, that's an interesting derivative of the machloket that we have over here. All right, Amar Rav Ashi, Mina Amin Allah, where can I prove to you that I'm right about the fact that Kinyan Meshicha does not work by an Oved Kochavim, only money does? The Rav said to these sellers of wine, we saw this yesterday, Rashi quotes that the word subyaita comes from zolel v'sovei, and sovei means someone who is dealing in wine intoxicated by wine. So the sobiata are the ones that are selling the intoxicating beverage. Kikaylitu chamra leuvdei kochavim. When you pour, measure out, dilute the wine for the uvdei kochavim, shaklu zuze minayu, take the payment up front, v'hadar kailan lehu, and then afterwards, pour it out for them, be mosaic or measure it out for them. V'ilo nikitu badayu zuze, if they don't have any money on hand, so you can't do this transaction, ozibinhu, lend them the money, v'hadar shakilu minayu, and then take it back from them, keichi ta'avi halva gabayu, so that you create a loan that's extended. V'ilo avaditu hachi. Because if you don't do this, if you don't undertake to do it this way, then it turns into yayin nesech while it's still in your possession. If that's the case, then in the end you're going to get paid for yayin nesech. So what Rav is indicating is you need the transaction to be done. You need the kinyan to be complete before you start to pour the wine. Because if you do it the other way around, what's going to happen is it's going to turn into yayin nesech in your possession. And then you're not going to be able to sell the yayin nesech because it's also ba'ana'ah. What Rav says is, get them to pay for it up front. That way the transaction is complete. That means the wine that you're giving them is their wine. They touch it. They make it into yayin nesech. It's their yayin. That's yayin nesech. And that's their problem. That's not your issue anymore. You sold it to them when it was just yayin. Pure yayin, your yayin, and that's fine. Now that you give it to them, you pour it into their containers, and it becomes yayin nesech, that is their issue. The other hand, if you first pour it out for them and then take the compensation, problem is that the wine turned into yayin nesech in your possession. And that can be too the case. I mean, that yayin nesech, the goy can make yayin nesech out of his wine, he can make yayin nesech out of your wine. His maga affects your wine as well. So now if you pour it into him and it becomes yayin nesech and still in your possession, then when he compensates you for it, he's paying you for yayin nesech, and that means that you're getting hana'ah from the yayin nesech. So that's Rav's suggestion. But you see, the solution to the problem, Rav says, is money. Ma'ot konot. The way to do it is have him prepay for the wine. And if he can't prepay for the wine, lend him the money. Make it into a credit transaction by which he's using the money to create the transaction, and then he owes you the money. Lend him the money, and then it'll be halva'ah. But there's still the kinyan ma'ot that is taking place, and that's important in order to avoid the problem of yayin nesech. So Rav Ashi says, that backs up my position that ma'ot are konot. If we hold like you, a meimar, that mishicha works, then from the moment that the ove kochavim takes it into his possession, he's konet, doesn't become yayin nesek until he touches it. And it seems, according to Rashi, that the kinyan mishicha happens through the medida. The fact that he is the one pouring it out into his utensil or taking it from the Jew's utensil, that creates the kinyan mishicha. Although the Rashba thinks that the kinyan mishicha happens afterwards when he picks up the utensil or the barrel because of the fact that kinyan mishicha shelo d'dat. Kinyan mishicha without intention is not considered a kinyan mishicha. Over here he's pouring the wine. He's not intending to do a kinyan mishicha. Therefore it doesn't act as a kinyan mishicha. Kinyan Mishicha only really happens when he takes the barrel, lifts up the barrel afterwards, and that's the Kinyan Mishicha that's taking place here. So you have a period of time in which he's making the Kinyan, and then the Yayin Nesek only happens after he touches it, or he moves it around, or uses his koach with it. So Gemara says, Idaka Kayo Virami Lamana Disrael Achanami. You'd be right about this if he was measuring it out and pouring it into the utensil of the Yisrael. That means that if he was using the utensil of the storekeeper to do this, and he pours it into the storekeeper's utensil, then the goy picks up the utensil to take it, then there's the kinyan mishicha, and then it doesn't become yayin nesech until he touches it. So you have the kinyan precede the yayin nesech. So that would be true if that was the scenario. But lo tzricha, the kakayel v'romi, the mana dove kochavim. It's a case where he's pouring it into the non-Jew's utensil. And the problem with the non-Jew's utensil is that there's yayin nesech in there. The base of the barrel, or base of his utensil, is already yayin nesech. That means as you're pouring it in, it's becoming yayin nesech into the barrel, and he doesn't do the kinyan mishicha until afterwards. So in that case, you have a problem, because then the yayin nesech is preceding the kinyan mishicha, and that's why you need the solution of Rav. So even if you believe that kinyan mishicha works, over here, you need Rav's solution, because here the kinyan mishicha is not going to solve your problem. The issue that the Baal Tosafot raises, Why then is Rav a solution to the problem? If you believe Kinyan Mashiach is the vehicle and the mechanism for Kinyan for a goy, then why does having him prepay change anything? Ma'ot are not konot for a goy, according to Maimar. It's only Mashiach that's konet. So if that's the case, even if you believe there's a problem here because regards to the Kinyan Mashiach, the solution isn't going to be to prepay, because that doesn't solve your problem. So what the Baal Tosafot suggests over here, they suggest here, and again later on, is that there might be an opinion, this goes against what seemingly is the conclusion of the Gemara in Bechorot, which is that the Gemara in Bechorot sees them being as mutually exclusive options. If Rabbi Yochanan believes that Ma'od Konot for a Jew, then for a Goy it's only Mishicha. And vice versa, for Reish Lakish who believes for a Jew it's Mishicha, then for a Goy it's Ma'od. What the Baal Tosafot suggests over here is that you could read it, Amitecha, that your friend or your fellow Jew, this type of Kinyan works, which implies that it's not true for the non-Jew. What's not true for the non-Jew is that not only does this work, but the other one works as well. Which is that, for instance, you would say, Mishicha is koneh for a Jew, like Reish Lakish. That means for a non-Jew, that's not the case. What's not the case is, it's not exclusive that Mishicha works. For the non-Jew, you could use or Mishicha, or Ma'ot. Either one would work for him. So as opposed to the Jew, who can only use Mishicha, for the Goy, you could use Ma'ot or Mishicha, and you could say the same thing in Rabbi Yochanan's opinion as well. But in that way, Baal Tosafot open up this possibility that Mishicha works by the Goy, and then if Mishicha is going to be a problem, you can entertain Rav's solution of Ma'ot Konot. But that means you can use both types of Kinyanim, and both would be functional for the Goy. Baal Tosafot say you have to say that, otherwise the Gemara's suggestion over here doesn't make any sense. They say we have a problem with Mishicha, so now we move to Ma'ot. Well, if you move to Ma'ot, that only works if you believe Ma'ot or Konot. If you believe Mashiach's Konet, it seems to be that they don't match. So what Tosafot is saying, that you have to believe that both work in that case. Gemara says, Sof, even in the scenario where he's pouring it into the Ovid Kochavim's barrel, Kimatala Vira Demana Kanyo. As the wine enters into the airspace of the utensil, that already becomes the possession of the Goy. Yainesek Lohavi Adamati Arite Demano. Doesn't become Yain Nesek until it hits the base of the barrel. Because the Yain that's already there, the Yain Nesek that's there, is at the bottom of the barrel. That means that the wine has to enter the airspace of the barrel, where the Kinyan will take place. And then the Yain Nesek only happens at the later moment when it hits the base of the barrel. Rashi says over here, when it enters into the airspace of the barrel, then there's a Kinyan Hagbah. The Kinyan Hagbah is because Rashi assumes that he's holding the utensil while the Jew's pouring it in there. So the Goy is holding the utensil while the Jew's pouring it in there. As soon as it enters into the airspace of the utensil, it's equivalent of a Kinyan Hagbah. He's holding the utensil up. But then it only becomes the Ayin Nesek when it hits the bottom of the barrel. And if you want to say that that still is a problem, that will solve your problem with regards to the first couple of drops that went in. First couple of drops that went in, they got a Kinyan before the Ayin Nesek. But once the remainder of the yayin starts to come in, then the remainder of the yayin is going to be problematic because it's attached to the bottom of the barrel. Shmaminan, nitzok, chibor. If that's the case, then you would come to the conclusion that a flow is considered to be a attachment or a connection that moves whatever is true about the bottom to the top. And that means here, too, if you think you still have a problem and the Kinyan Mashiach won't solve your problem or Kinyan Akbah won't solve your problem, and you need Rav to come in with Ma'ot Konot, that means you believe that this is problematic because of the fact that it's a chibur. Otherwise, you'd have the wine entering into the airspace being nikneh, and then only becoming Yain Nesek when it hits the bottom. And that can be true for the whole flow. But if you say it's not true for the whole flow, that means that you believe whatever's at the bottom is attached to the flow that's coming down. That means that you think Nitzok is a chibur, which is a machloket that we have as to whether Nitzok works or doesn't work. We're going to see that coming up in tomorrow's daf. So that would be a conclusion about this matter. Gemara says, well, you don't have to say that. The truth is that there's another solution to the problem, which is the stop. Which is that you pour, stop, where there's a stutter in the pouring and there's not a direct flow the whole time. But it does what say that it was untenable because of the large amounts or quantity of wine that was being done. To pour in that matter would be too hard. And therefore, they didn't use that as a solution. Gemara says, "Lo, that's not the case." This all assumes that the goy is holding it in his hands, and therefore, the kinyan mishicha is taking place, or the kinyan akbah, really, before the ayin esech. Lo tzricha de mona aro. That in cases where the utensil is sitting on the ground, and therefore, When it hits the utensil, he doesn't have a hagbon, and he's not lifting it up. It's just sitting there on the ground, and then there's no kinyan taking place, and then as the wine enters, it becomes the ayinesech as it hits the bottom of the barrel. Nothing to do with nitzel, just the fact that as it continues to pile up at the bottom of the barrel, that's going to make it into the ayinesech, and there's no kinyan of the goy before that. It says the tiknei lekelav. Why don't you say that his kli, the Ovi Kohen's kli, acquires it on his behalf, even without a kinyan hagbon? The kli should act on his behalf. The fact that you're not saying that means shmamina kelav shalokeach reshut mocher lo kana lokeach. It's a huge machloket that we saw back in the Gemara in Bava Metzia, Bava Batra. When you have the acquirers, the buyers kelim in the property of the mocher, do his kelim get enough of an independent, significant status that they can acquire on his behalf? We know that there's a concept of kinyan chatzer or kinyan kelim, which is that your utensils, your chatzer, can acquire on your behalf. The question is, where do those kelim have to be? Do they have to be in your property, in your possession for that to happen? Or can they even work in the mocher's possession? Over here, you would come to the conclusion, the fact that you can't make a kinyan here shows you that the kelim and the lokeach don't work in the possession of the mocher. And that would be a conclusion to a significant question that is debated in Bava Metzia and Bava Batra. It says, even if the lokeach is kone in that case, that there is a small amount of wine that is on the lip of the kuznata, of the pitcher or of the small utensil in which you're pouring into. So not only is there wine at the base of this pitcher or barrel that you're filling, there's also some wine on the surface, at the lip of it. The kama kama insechle. And that makes it that as it enters, it becomes the ayinesech, because it's now touching the ayinesech up front, and therefore any kinyan that takes place afterwards, no matter what you think, is not going to solve your problem, because the ayinesech happened up front. Now, the obvious question is, you have a tiny bit of ayinesech at the top, then as the ayin that you're pouring in touches it and goes in, it should become batel. And if it's batel, then again, you're back to square one, because then the kinyan mishnicha would precede the problem of yayin nesek, would solve the problem because you don't have yayin nesek here. The Baal Tosafot say, you have to believe over here, v'yesh lamar, demin b'minohu, v'kasavar delo batil. This opinion must believe that we're speaking about min b'mino, and since it's min b'mino, there's no being mevatel it. That means that no matter how much wine now pours onto this yayin nesek, that's not going to help you because it's min b'mino, and it's not batel. But in that way now, we've come up to a solution which says that Rav's suggestion doesn't have to be just according to the one who says ma'ot konot. Even according to the one who says mishicha koneh, there are times where mishicha can't solve your problem. That's in a case where you're pouring into a utensil or a barrel, where there's wine on the surface, wine on the edge of the top, and therefore there's going to become yayin nesech before the kinyan takes place. And the only way to solve that problem is to use Rav's solution, which is to have him prepay and go into his possession. Again, that assumes that prepayment works, according to this opinion, it says Mishicha Koneh. That's what we saw in the Baal Tosafot. This has to be according to the one who says that both Kinyanim would be necessary here in order for this to function. And even though the Baal Tosafot say, why don't we just ask him to wipe down the barrel beforehand? Just ask him to wipe off the rim. Ask him to just clean out the bottom of the barrel, and that'll be the solution to the problem. The Baal Tosafot say that that is a takana that will not be upheld. For something that's difficult, people will forget about it. People won't do it as carefully as they should. This way, if you say prepay, that's a, first of all, transactional type of solution, and it's something that people will be willing to do. And because of that, that will be the better solution to the problem, is prepaying, rather than having people have to do all this type of, you know, gymnastics to make sure that they get the kli clean and they make sure to test it beforehand. That's too much to ask, and that's not the normal way that these things are done. So you're asking, first of all, to deviate from the normal behavior. And number two is to do something that takes more effort. Here, if you do prepayment, which is just a normal type of transaction, they're more likely to get the problem solved and do the right thing. And the Gemara says, Uchaman, and that would only be according to Lo Ke Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Can't be according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, who we bumped into a little bit before. We're going to bump into again. Zayd Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Amar, Imacher kulo lobeid obdei kokovim chutz me yayin nesach shebo. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel believes that you can sell off a mixture of yayin nesach and other items. When you have yayin nesach mixed together with other wine, the wine that's mixed together with it is totally mutar. The yayin nesech is the sur for you to get hana from. So you can sell that to a goy. You, of course, can't use it. You can't drink it because you can't separate between the items. But what you can do is sell it to a goy, chutz, with the exception of the money or the value of the domain yayin nesech. And that's what Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's suggestion is in the Gemara upcoming on Ayin Dalit, that if you have this yayin nesech that fell into your boar, into the collection vat in the press, that will not be as big a deal. Yes, you have a problem of yayin nesech and a problem of Isra Hana'ah, but yet you can then just sell the whole thing off and just leave out the monetary value of the yayin nesech. So that means that you could monetize it, you just have to leave out the money of the yayin nesech. And so too over here, he could just sell it X the little drops of yayin nesech that are there. So even though there's a mixture of yayin nesech and yayin, but the overwhelming majority is your yayin, and you could sell it and leave out those little drops of yayin nesech that are mixed in there. That would be a solution of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. The Chachamim disagree with him. So now, what the Gemara is saying is that this can't be like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, because otherwise you have a solution to the problem. The Gemara says, no, maybe not. Because, this whole situation is here is because of Rav's solution. Rav's solution is that you prepay to solve the problem. Hamarav, halacha Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, chavit bechavit, avalo el yayin beyayin. Rav paskins like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, but not totally like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. He says Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is right when you have a cellar full of barrels, and then a barrel of yayin nesek got mixed up there. You have 100 barrels of regular wine and 1 barrel of yayin nesek. So you could sell off the whole 101, but only take compensation for 100. But if the wine literally got mixed in with the yayin nesek, then you can't sell it off. So then you could still paskin like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel within the context of Rav, and then now according to Rav, that would work fine. Rav's the one with the suggestion. We're trying to solve this problem to show that Rav doesn't necessarily hold ma'ot konot, but maybe even mishicha koneh. So now you said, well, if you do that, you can't paskin like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. The answer is, this is Rav, l'shitato. And according to Rav, you could paskin like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, because he doesn't think that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel has application by yayin the yayin. In our case here, that's the case of yayin the yayin. He's pouring the wine into the utensil of the goy, and it's touching the little dots, the little drips at the top or around the rim, and that's causing the yayin nesek problem. That's a yayin be yayin problem. And there, we don't pass on like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, according to Rav. Now the Gemara says, Meitavei. What about the Gemara back on Daf Nun Gimel? The Balei Tosafot dealt with this issue on Samach Gimel Amud Aleph, where they discussed in the context of Etnan Zonah. They spoke about this Machloka Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. The Gemara itself discussed this back on Nun Gimel Amud Aleph. And over there, if you look carefully, it seems that Rashi is explaining the Gemara over there on Nun Gimel Amud Aleph according to Reish Lakish. And so here, the Gemara is going to bring that up. Meitavei. Lokeach Guta Ot Mina Obdei Kochavim. A person who is buying metal, silver, from an Obdei Kochavim. Matza Behen Avodat Kochavim. And he finds amongst his purchase, Avodah Zorah. Imach Lo Natan Ma'ot Mashach. If before he gave money, he did a kinyan mishicha, yafzir, then he can give it back. Imish natan ma'ot mashach, if after he gave the money, he did a kinyan mishicha, yolich the Yam HaMelech. Then he has to take it to Yam HaMelech, meaning that it's your problem now, it's your avodah zarah, and you can't now return it to him for compensation, because that means that you're monetizing avodah zarah. Isa gadatcho mishicha bovei kochavim koneh. If you really believe that a kinyan mishicha works by Obdei Kochavim, amai yachzir. You saw in the first case, it says, imad shelo natan ma'ot mashach. If he didn't pay money, but he did a kinyan mishicha, then yachzir, he's allowed to give it back. Well, why is he allowed to give it back? He just took possession of it. Because a kinyan mishicha works. So if a kinyan mishicha works, why are you allowed to give it back? Same is true in the seifa. In the seifa, why can't he give it back? If he paid money, it's no kinyan until he does the mishicha. Now, the truth is, the seifa says he did both. He paid money, and he did a kinyan mishicha, so that might be the problem. But in the ratio, if your kinyan mishicha works, why is there any ability to give it back when you didn't pay the money? Because it looks like a mekach taot. That's why you did a kinyan mishicha, you have yet to pay the money for it, and then you realize that he's selling you something that you don't want. And that's a mekach taot, which unwinds the transaction. Mekach taot says it's if the transaction never took place, and that's why you can return it to him. So Amarava, Rava says to Abaye, Reisha mekach taot, Seifa lav mekach taot. Okay, that's a great solution for the first case in the Braita of Brutot. But in the second case, you have to say the same thing. Even when he pays the money and does a kinyan mishicha, there's still a mekach taot. He gave him something that he wasn't intending to buy. That is a failed transaction, and you should be able to unwind the transaction. So according to you, Reish Lakish, now you explain why he can unwind the transaction in the first case, but he also explained why he should be able to do it in the second case as well. Why does the Braita differentiate between the first case where it says you can unwind it, and the second case where you cannot unwind it? Your reasoning, you should be able to unwind both transactions because it's a mekach ta'ot. Elama Rava, Reisha v'seifa mekach ta'ot. Rava says that they are both classified as a mekach ta'ot. For Reisha, the lawyer in Zuze, in the Reisha of the Braita where he didn't hand over cash, lo mitchazek uvarat kochavim b'yad Yisrael. It doesn't look like you took possession of the item and then you're selling it back to him. Seifa doyoyiv zuzei. In the Seifa where you gave him cash already, mitchazek uvarat kochavim b'yad Yisrael. Looks like you are selling him the item. If you want to refund, what happened? In the case of the Reisha, he gave you the medals and you did a kinyan mishikha on it, but you didn't pay him any money yet. The kinyan mishikha might have worked, but it's a failed transaction because it was a mekach ta'ot. He gave you things that you didn't want and you didn't know about. And the kinyan mishikha failed. So the whole transaction failed. What do you have to do in that case? Just hand him back his items. That doesn't look like you've transacted with it. It doesn't look like you're getting benefit from anything. You're just handing him back his items. In the latter case, where he already paid for it, again, it's a mekach ta'ot. It was a false presumption that you were buying something, and instead he gave you another thing that you didn't intend to buy. Failed transaction. The problem now is, he has your money, you have his items. And now in order to solve the problem and refund it, you have to give him his items and he has to give you cash. That looks like a transaction. Looks like you're selling him back the avodat kochavim and then taking money for it. And that's why Rava says the seifa is problematic, because it looks like as if the refund is really a transaction in avodah zarah. So Amalei Mark Shisha Breder of Chisda Levashi, Tashma. Let us prove it from here. Mocher yeno l'ovei kochavim. Our Mishnah, where it says that if you sell the yayin to l'ovei kochavim, pasak ad shalom madad. If they conclude on price before the mitigdah is done, tamav mutarim. In that case, it's fine. V'amart mishicha b'ovei kochavim eno koneh. If you tell me that a mishicha doesn't work, amai tamav mutarim. Then why does it work over here? There was no money that changed hands. The only thing that happened was he did a kinyan mishicha on it. The kinyan mishicha brought it into his possession, and that's why it becomes yayin nesach in his possession, and the money that you get afterwards is mutar, because you sold him wine before it became yayin nesach. Hacha ma'eskinam da'aktim le'dinar. So it's a case where he prepaid him, so there's also a kinyan ma'ot. Where it says, ihachi e'maseifa. Then what are you going to do with the second half of the Mishnah? Madad ad shelo pasak tamav. If he measured out before they came to conclusion of price, asurim, then it's problematic. V'idakadim le'dinar amaitam asurim. If he prepaid for it, why is there a problem? If you tell me ma'ot konot and he's prepaying for it, then why does it matter whether he set the price, didn't set the price, measured out, didn't measure out? If he prepays, then in the first case he prepays, it's his. In the second case he prepays, it's his. Whatever happens afterwards doesn't really matter because you think ma'ot konot. So how are you going to explain the seifa? Amalei ulididach. According to you, damar mishicha b'ovei kochavim koneh, according to you, it says that mishicha is the vehicle for kinyan. You gave selective disclosure here. You only quoted the first piece of the Mishnah. You didn't quote the second half of the Mishnah. The second half of the Mishnah is a problem for you. Amai reisha d'mav mutarim, the seifa d'mav asurim. Why is it that the reisha works and the seifa doesn't work? Now, in the reisha, I understand why it works, because they did mididah, and that means there was a kinyan mishicha. That's why the money that you could pay it afterwards is fine, because it went into his possession before it turned into yayin nesach. The Seifa case, how are you going to explain now? It says, they weren't posek damim, but then he was modei, and he measured it out. You have a kinyan mishicha there as well before he gets paid. That kinyan mishicha should make it that it's fine, because the yayin nesach only happens after it's his. In both the Reish and the Seifa, you have a kinyan mishicha. That should have freed you of any problem. Why is the money mutar in the first case, and asur in the second case? You brought me the first case, which proves your point. But the second case is problematic for you. How are you going to explain it? You're telling me, asking me how I'm going to explain it? You can't explain it either. The only way you can explain it is, pasok samchodate. If they come to a conclusion on price, then there's what's called smicha tadat, gemira tadat. The person relies on the fact that the transaction will go through. Lo pasok, if you don't come to a conclusion on price, lo samchodate. The person doesn't really believe or doesn't feel fully that the transaction is going to go through because he may charge me too much for what is there. So what you're saying is that the Mishnah is not really focused on the Kenyan. It's focused on whether the Kenyan will make a difference in this case. And so how are you going to explain the Mishnah now you, a Meimar, who thinks that it's a Kiddush Mishicha, you're going to say that Mishnah reads in the following manner. Pasak Tamav, in a case where you agreed on price and then measured out the item, that means when he does the Kiddush Mishicha, he really believes it's his now. Because he knows what the price is. He intends to buy it and he did a Kiddush Mishicha. It's in his possession now. Once it's in his possession, comes the Ayin Nesech, not your problem. That's why you can take the money. In the latter half of the Mishnah, where you have not come to an agreement on price, and then you start to measure it out to him and pour it out to him, and he does a Kiddush Mishicha, that Kiddush Mishicha is not a real Kiddush Mishicha because you don't have price yet. And he may walk away from the transaction. He doesn't have Gemira Tadat, Smicha Tadat. He's not relying on the fact that he's really going to buy this wine because there's a chance the price will be too high and he'll walk from it. That means the Kiddush Mishicha is not effective. If the Kiddush Mishicha is not effective, then you have a problem when he touches it, it becomes the Ayin Nesech, and it's still the Jew's property. That's the explanation. That's the same way that all solve the problem. The dinami, afagav the kodim le dinar, even though he's prepaying pasuk, if they have a price set already, samchadate, then he will rely on the fact that he's prepaid and he's actually going to buy the wine and he'll refund you the difference between the price and whatever money you gave him. Lo pasuk, if you haven't agreed on price, lo samchadate. He will not rely on that fact because he says, I don't know what the price is. So now it's an interesting scenario. He's prepaying, and despite the fact that he's prepaying, he might get a refund back. He's not really concluded that it's an agreed price, and he's expecting to get all his money back if he doesn't agree on price. So that's what he's saying, that that'll be the way we both can read this Mishnah. And therefore, there's no proof from our Mishnah as to whether it's a Kinyan Mishicha or a Kinyan Ma'ot. Amar le Ravina le Ravashi, Tashma. Damar Rabbi Chia bar Ab Amar Rabbi Yochanan. So Ravina says to Ravashi, I'll show you that Kinyan Mishicha is the way to do it. Because Ben Noach, Nerag, Apachot Mishave Pruta, Lonitan E Shavon. Ben Noach that steals from a Jew, less than a Shave Pruta. In that case, he'll be subject to a death penalty, because Ben Noach, the Sheva Mitzvah B'nei Noach, they're held accountable for them. If they violate them, then they get the death penalty. As the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, As Haratan Zohi Mitatan. The warning, or the restriction, is their death warrant. So if they violate it, they're going to be chayav mita. And number two is, it's less than a shavet pruta. Now with less than a shavet pruta between Jews, there's no problem of zela mido, right? At least, because a Jew is mochel on less than a shavet pruta. He will say, yeah, it's not such a big deal, it's too small, it is not significant enough for me to hold the other guy accountable. For that reason, the theft will not be deemed theft, mido, right? Obviously it's a sort to do it, but it won't be deemed theft, and therefore the party that took it doesn't have to even return it, because it's not deemed as theft. On the other hand, the goy is makbin on less than a shavet pruta, then for him, less than a shavet pruta will be deemed to be theft, or stealing. And because of that, if he steals, he will now be subject to a death penalty, but it can't be returned, seemingly at this point, because the Jew is mochel on it, and he doesn't really care about getting it back, because he doesn't care about less than a shavet pruta. The Balei Tosafot bring a quote from Rashi that we do not have. The Balei Tosafot quote from Rashi, the reason that you can't return it is because of kamlei derabim minei. Because there's a death penalty. If there's a death penalty, then all monetary obligations are wiped out. Balei Tosafot say that is clearly not the case here, because if that's the case, a non-Jew would never have to pay back his gezel. Even if it's more than a shavet pruta, he wouldn't have to return the money because of kamlei derabim minei. We don't see such a thing. So he rejects Rashi, although the Rashi we have in front of us doesn't have that explanation. The noni tana ishavon, we said because the Jew is mochel on it. And that's why you don't have to give it back. If you say that mishicha doesn't work, why is he getting killed? He couldn't steal it. You can only steal it if you can come into possession of it. Then you would be obligated in the theft. If you can't take possession of it, then you also can't steal it. By this vote, say over here, what are you talking about? Why do you have to come into possession of an item in order to be a thief? Every thief, a Jewish thief that steals from another Jew, he becomes chayav for the theft, even though he can't take possession of it. The Jew who steals from a fellow Jew, he becomes chayav in unsin, becomes responsible for anything that happens to the item, but he doesn't become the owner of the item. It belongs to the original Jew, unless there's Yeush. You need Yeush, and then Shinoi Rishut. You got Balim, you have to give up. On it, plus, it has to pass into someone else's possession before he takes full possession of it. So over here, the Jew steals it, he doesn't get possession of it, he's still considered a ganav or a gazlan. So why can't the non-Jew be in the same exact position? That the Balei Tosafot say, Yesh lomar, vadai I gazal shave pruta. If he stole something of significance, which is a shave pruta from the Jew, davi memona legabe Yisrael, which is considered to be a monetary item with regards to the Jew, v'chisro, at that point he caused a diminution in the estate or the assets of the Jew by stealing from him, ilan the main market parashti. Then you can say what I said, which is, just like a Jew can steal something and be responsible, even though he doesn't take possession of it, the same will be true for a non-Jew. Aval pachot mishave pruta. When he steals less than a shave pruta, shelo chisro Yisrael, he didn't cause a diminishment in the estate of the Jew, because he's mochel on that. And the goy isn't making off like a bandit and expanding his possessions here with this little less than a shave pruta. Shailo kana, because he didn't take possession of it. That's what the Gemara asks. Why is he being killed over here? Because the normal rules of Zela are not going to apply over here. The normal rules of Zela say you are responsible and considered a gazlan because you enriched yourself at the expense of someone else. Over here, the goy is not enriching himself because he didn't take possession of it, and he's not diminishing what the Jew had because it's less than a shave pruta and he's mochel on it. So that's why Tosafot says we need a kinyan over here to be the vehicle for making him chayav. And that's the question of the Gemara. What's the vehicle of kinyan? If you say that it's mishicha, I understand what happens over here. Kinyan ma'ot is not going to be relevant over here because we're thinking about gzeila. And so he says, that's a kinyan mishicha. So the Gemara says, no. My nerag mishum tetzarei l'Yisrael. Maybe the reason he's being killed over here is not because of the theft, qua theft, but the theft that caused the Jew discomfort, caused him agitation, and the fact that someone stole his property. So the fact that he was agitated by it, that's what garners the individual the death penalty. So now the Gemara asks, Umay lo nitan le'ishavon. If according to you, the reason he's getting the death penalty is because he's agitating him, then it means that he never took possession of the item. He never took possession of the item. What does it mean to return it to him? Not return it to him, it's the Jews. Everywhere it goes, it's still the Jews. He never went out of his possession that you have to return it. The Gemara answers, then ain't a torah te'ishavon. Even though, technically, you're right, it's the Jew's possession anywhere it goes, still, he doesn't have to re-enter it into the Jew's possession, so the Jew now has control over it, gets it back. That's what it means. Eino b'torah te'shavon. That's the way that Rashi explains it. Balei Tosafot don't like that explanation, because he says, v'tema, ha'Yisrael nami lo kana gzeila, v'afilu achita b'torah te'shavon. Tosafot says, what's the Gemara's question then? According to the way Rashi's explaining it, because even by a Jew that steals from a fellow Jew, he doesn't take possession of the item, yet he's still responsible to return it. The Balei Tosafot in the end say that the Gemara's question is the following. If you believe the whole reason that he's Kayav Mitai over here is because of Tzarei Yisrael, because he agitated, upset the Jew, then why do you even have to mention Lo Nitan Le'Ishavon? That's obvious. Because the problem is not the theft itself, it is the mental anguish and intangible item that you cause that's causing the death penalty. Of course you can't return it, you can't rectify that problem. And therefore, why do you have to even tell me Lo Nitan Le'Ishavon? It's so obvious. The answer to the Gemara is that you're right. Lo Nitan Le'Ishavon, that he can't give it back, means Eino B'Torah Te'Ishavon. The fact is, it's just not in the world of Eishavon because of the fact that it's mental anguish and agitation. And that's why it doesn't even fit into the world of Eishavon. That's what the Braita was saying. And then the Balei Tosafot asked, based on my opinion before that I told you that Kini Meshicha works where money is not an issue. For instance, in Mitziah, Matana, even Rav Ashi will agree that Kinyan Meshicha works because there's no option of using money as the acquisition vehicle. Why don't you say the same thing over here by Gezel? Gezel also should be functioning through Kinyan Meshicha, even according to Rav Ashi, because there's no monetary exchange. The Balei Tosafot in the end say that Gezel is much more similar to Mekach u'Memkar than it is to Matana or Mitziah. That is a difficult statement because Gezel seems much more akin to Mitziah, where you have a unilateral transaction rather than Mekach u'Memkar, where you have bilateral transaction. And so Balei Tosafot say that the reason that Meshicha doesn't work here, even though there's no real Ma'ot, is because we're going to compare Gezel to Mekach u'Memkar and not to Matanah Mitziah, which seems to be a stretched solution to the problem that the Balei Tosafot raised by saying that Meshicha works according to everyone in situations where there is no ma'ot. So the Gemara says, Iochie Maseifa. What are you going to do about the latter half of that Braita? Bachaveirov and Atlami Menu. if the goy comes and steals it from this goy who stole it from a Jew, neregaleh, he's killed for it. Bishlam aresha mishum detzari leYisrael. I understand why there's a death penalty in the first case, because he agitated the Jew. Elaseifa mayovid. In the latter case, what did the second thief do? He stole from another Ben Noach. If you believe there's no kinyan over here, that he's not stealing from the Ben Noach, because the Ben Noach never came into possession of it. So then what did the second guy do? He didn't steal from the goy. He didn't agitate the Israel. That the first goy already did. So then why is he subject to a death penalty? Elishmamina. Mishicha bovid kuchavim koneh. Shmamina. From here it's pretty clear that an Ovid Kuchavim has the ability to make a kinyan through Mishicha. And that way the first gazlan becomes the owner of the item when he takes it away from the Jew. And then the second goy becomes the owner when he steals it from the goy. But that means he's stealing from another Ben Noach. So the first Ben Noach stole from the Jew, and he's chayav mitah for that. And the second goy stole from the first goy. He's also subject to a death penalty, and that's because it went into the possession of the first gazlan. And the second gazlan then is chayav for stealing it from the first gazlan. But that shows you that kinyan mishicha works over here. Just as a sidebar here, it's a somewhat of an oxymoron that the fact that Jew is mochel about a less than shavu pruta lands the goy in a position where he's getting a death penalty and he can't do a shabon. Turns out to be somewhat quixotic, because the Jew says, I really don't care about this theft. Because of that, the goy can't return it because the Jew is mochel. And since the Jew is mochel and the goy can't return it, now he's subject to a death penalty. So it turns out, where the Jew doesn't care, it makes it more problematic for the goy when he steals it. Had the Jew cared about it, then he could have returned it and solved the problem. The fact that now the Jew doesn't care about it means he can't return it, and now he's going to be subject to a penalty. So it's counterintuitive. Turns out that when the Jew doesn't care, the goy is more responsible, or is going to be held more liable for it. That is a result of what the Gemara is saying over here. It's an interesting note, because the Gemara doesn't address that inconsistency, but that is something that comes out of this Gemara over here. Okay, we're going to stop here, five lines down on the top of Ayin Bet, Amud Aleph.